The following audio is from the weekly message at Summit Church in the upstate of South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Good morning, Summit Easley. How are y'all doing this morning? It's good. All right. This is good, about as good as we all are. No, I'm just kidding. It's really great to see you. Really happy to be here. My name is Nathan. I'm one of the pastors on the team, and it is my joy and privilege to be here with you this morning. I want to echo the welcome that you may have already received this morning. Hopefully, you've already received, someone has said hi to you, I hope. I hope people were nice to you. If this is your home, or if this is maybe your first time here, we're really happy you're here. It is pretty common knowledge that there's a couple other things you could be doing this morning other than sitting in a theater. And so worshiping together, and so we don't take your presence here for granted. There's a lot of good churches around this area that make much of Jesus and the gospel, so thank you. Couple of announcements. I'm going to do announcements on the front side because I have bad news. We're in Ecclesiastes. We're all going to be sad when we leave this morning. Hopefully, there's going to be a glimmer of hope, but we're not going to be in the mood for announcements. When are we ever in the nude for announcements, by the way? Just a couple things. One, high school and middle school Woodlands camp, which doesn't matter. If you've read Ecclesiastes, you know camp doesn't matter, which is good because registration for high school and middle school camp's closed. So a freestyle camp for your elementary students matters a lot, and that registration is really open, and that matters, even though Solomon will probably disagree with me. And then lastly, what actually does matter, I'm not making light of this, I just want to let you know that last week we put the budget before you, and the church Summit unanimously affirmed the budget, so thank you. And alongside of that, if this is your home, like, we genuinely appreciate your regular, faithful, sacrificial giving that makes that budget function and makes the ministry of Summit even possible. So thank you for all of that. Now, with all of that said, we're in Ecclesiastes where nothing matters. And so if you would, go ahead and turn there. I don't know about your experience, but my kids, they have certain things that they do and certain things that they give themselves to that I step into it. And I'm like, I don't understand why you care about this thing. So for example, one of my daughters, she got a significant amount of money for Christmas and birthday. And then she comes back. Her love of stuffed animals, I don't get. Like, to the degree of where it's like, your money is your money. You can do what you want, except I don't understand why you're spending that money on that. So much money. And so, like, my daughter, she has her stuffed animals. My dear, sweet bride, who is super sweet and super innocent, loves her true murder crime podcast along with Beth. Like, I don't get it. It's like all of these really brutal, tragic things. And I'm like, this is devastating. Please, I don't want to hear any of this. Like, why does this matter? Why are we giving our times to this thing? You know who you are. You messed up, Pete. I don't understand. Anyway, but I also, my wife tells, I have things that I give I invest in that my wife questions. Things like polyhedral dice. I'm like, this dice is worth $15. She's like, why is that dice worth $15? I'm like, you don't understand. It really does, though. Why is that coffee worth that? It does. This coffee matters. And so we all have our things that we think are really, really valuable and worth that investment that when other people look at, they're like, why does that matter? We struggle. We do two things. One, we struggle to explain it, but also we are like, no, but really, even though you can't understand it because you are an uncultured swine, this really does matter. We might not use those words, but in my mind, I'm like, this really does matter. And this is what Ecclesiastes continues to do. It confronts our things. The thing that you and I look at and we're like, this is why I'm getting up out of bed in the morning, either consciously or subconsciously. What the book of Ecclesiastes continues to press down on is it really? Is it really worthy of the significance that you and I place on it? And we're like, I hope so, because that's why I've been living. Last night, I was sitting down reading Ecclesiastes, and my son sprints down, soaking wet, and he just like jumps under a blanket on the couch with me, and he's like, "Daddy, snuggle me." I'm like, "All right, but we're reading Ecclesiastes." He's like, "That's fine." And so I start reading it out loud to him. And I'm like, "You realize what he's saying, right? Like nothing matters." And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "So what do you like? Nothing matters." And he's like, "Really?" That's where we are. So this is the question. What do we do with this? Because this is where we left off last week, Ecclesiastes verse 1 through 11. And I would invite you to turn there. Where we left off last week is Solomon, the teacher, the Koheleth, in the Hebrew, the teacher or the critic is a kind of a good lens through which to read this, the skeptic. He's looking at the vast scope of human creation, and all of creation, the cosmic scale of things. And what does man, look at verse 4, a generation goes, a generation comes, but the earth remains forever, the sun rises, the sun goes down, hastens to a place where, as you look across the vast cosmos and the magnitude of time, what is your existence and my existence? Thanks. I don't even know. Why are you talking to me? The question is, why are you telling me what the meaning of life is right now? Stop. Okay. I'm going to take this off. Give away the whole A secret. What the teacher is doing is he's looking at all of the cosmos and he's like, what is your life and my life compared to that? The magnitude of time. I took my kids up to Caesar's Head last spring, and you're sitting up there, and you're like, this mountain has been here a while without anyone really caring about it. And it's going to be here after I die. And it's just here. Like, what is, when we get out here, it's like, what is my life next to everything? You're like, that's a good question. I feel like my son. I don't know. But this is what we do. And I think the teacher, as we continue in this passage, what the teacher does is he knows how we live. Like, he's a human. And what we do is we step back from the magnitude of time and we try to, because we need meaning. We crave meaning. We crave significance. There has to be a purpose in what we do. And so what we do is then we try to prop up and we seek to carve out and prop up our lives and to justify their significance in the context of all that is. And so the teacher, I the preacher, he walks that journey out. So this is where we are this morning. Verse 12, chapter 1, verse 12. I the preacher have been king over Israel and Judah, and I applied my heart to seek out and search out wisdom and all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given the children of man to be busy with. I love just the abysmal, pessimistic nature. He's like, I'm trying to figure out what's the purpose for everything. And guess what my first thought is? This is not fun. Like, this is really difficult. And so in the context of stepping back from all of creation, he's like, well, let's try to figure out this answer. Let's figure out what gives my life significance. And this is his conclusion. Verse 14, ready? I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, it is all vanity and striving after the wind. That's his thesis statement. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. Man, this is devastating, right? Like, what is going to give us significance? He's like, there's no answer. That idea of vanity and striving after the wind, it is, and to reiterate, if you weren't able to be here in the last couple weeks, it is this idea of a vapor. It is but a breath. It is the smoke dissipating above a birthday candle. And what the author is saying and what the teacher is saying, he's like, that's our lives after everything I've done. And what we like to do, Just like kids or just like students, is we want to question it. And we're like, well, maybe. Are you sure, though? Because I don't know if you know this thing. Like, I've got dice, or I've got our stuffed animals, right? Like, we've got our things. And so this is what he does, is he's like, okay, I'm going to show you. We're going to walk through some of the things that I've walked through. Ready? Verse 16. I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom. I have surpassed all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. Period. Don't keep reading. All right, so what did he do? The very first thing he does, he's like, all right, so this is where I first did to find significance and purpose in my life. Ready? I went after wisdom and knowledge. I went after the degrees, I went after knowing things, and I went after the studies, the knowledge portion of it, and just the sheer intellect of it. All of the degrees, and this is hyperbole, right? Like, all of the degrees, all of the drapes, you know, the different colors at college graduations, he's like, oh, they're all hanging around my neck. Didn't satisfy. And you're like, I know that, we know that to be true, right? Like, there's never been a point in my life where I've put down a book or I finished a class or I listened to a TED Talk and I'm like, I'm kind of good now. Like, that's enough. I never got done reading, this is a confession, 10 ways to fix XYZ in your life, like the hot life hacks. And you're just like, I've never got done reading those and be like, yeah, I'm good. Like, my life, all of my questions are answered, and I'm happy. You never get done doing a binge on a newscast and think, man, this is just great. Right? Like, this is our experience. In fact, we almost find the inverse to be true, do we not? Like, I remember talking to a new mom who was a nurse. And weirdly enough, being a medical professional does not ease the stress or despair or anxiety about being a mom. In fact, in her experience, it only made it worse because she knew all of the things that could go wrong. Like, this is our human experience. Because look at what he says. I perceived, this is also but striving after the wind, for in much wisdom is much vexation. And he who increases in knowledge increases sorrow. This is our experience, right? Like, each of you, in various places of your life and existence, and work and careers and studies, like, you're experts in things, right? Like, some of you are experts in the construction world. Some of you are experts in kids. We need to talk later. And some of you are experts in psychology, and some of you are experts in the maths, and this, well, the maths, and all of it, all of the maths and sciences. That's my brain. That's how much I know. And this is what you know. The more you grow in your knowledge of that thing, the less certain that thing is for you, because you know how much you don't know. Like, I get a chance to teach a theology class, and for a gap year, and it's very funny to walk with students through, and they're like, well, you're going to give us all the answers. I'm like, I don't think you understand how this works. Like, I give you questions, and I tell you more of the open-handedness of the Bible. I give you the absolutes of what's very clear, but also, there's the more you study Scripture, the more we realize this is what we know, and this is what we get to cling to, and this is what we don't know, and this bucket gets pretty big. This is all of our existence. If you and I seek to justify our lives and look to wisdom and knowledge to give us peace and significance in this world, you'll never be satisfied. There's not going to be a TED Talk that's going to give you peace. There's not going to be a single sermon that is going to answer all of your questions. Cool. Why? Because even life with knowledge and wisdom remains a vapor. A life with wisdom and knowledge still remains a vapor. Like, it's strange. I'm 38 and now I'm beginning, my professors from school, from my college days, are starting to pass away. And I'm like, this is They're brilliant, wise people that invested a lot in me, and it's passing away. It's not enough. So let's go to the next thing. Verse 1, chapter 2, verse 1. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, this is mad. And of pleasure, what use is it? I searched my heart to know how to cheer my body with wine. My heart was still guiding me with wisdom, how to lay hold of folly, till I might see what is good for the children of man to do under heaven during the first few days of my life. I feel like this guy is a college freshman, right? Like, I feel like he's like, maybe going to class will make me. Nope, no, it won't. Maybe going to the party will make me. Nope, it won't. He keeps going. I made great works. Verse 4, I built houses, I planted vineyards for myself, I made gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest for growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I also had great possessions of herd and flocks, more than any who had before me in Jerusalem. I gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, many concubines, the delight of the sons of man. And so I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. And also my wisdom remained with me. And there's two things as you track through this paragraph. There's two conglomerations. One, I am seeking to find, he sought to find a significance and purpose in accomplishing things proactively, but also experiencing things at the cost of others. All of the things. And so I became great. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was the reward for all of my toil. What does he say? And then I considered all the works that my hands had done, and the toil that I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity, striving after the wind, and that there was nothing to be gained under the sun. I remember being in third grade, elementary school, before I stepped into the homeschool world. And I remember looking at the swing set on the elementary playground and being like, man, I can't wait till I arrive and get to swing on those swings, because then I'll be happy. And then I got to fifth grade, and guess what? Swinging on the swings, I'm like, this is not what I thought it was going to be. But middle school's coming, and middle schoolers are cool. Man, fifth grade boys. And I was like, and one day I'm going to have a girlfriend, and then my life is going to matter. And then, whew, boy, my first girlfriend, sideways. And so then you're like, well, then I'm going to get into high school, and in high school I will be cool, and I'll be able to sit with the cool kids in high school, and then I'm going to have my life, because I look at that the high school seniors, and they're like, they have their lives together, like they are the thing. So when I get to maybe my senior year, after I can drive, and maybe when girls like me, and then I got there, and guess what? You've lived this life, right? And then you're like, I'm not there yet, but when I get to college, then I will be free from my oppressive parents, and then life will be worth living, finally. And then I got to high school, college, and then you're like, still, I need more money, and I need to be married. So if I have those two things nailed down, if I have a girl that she can't leave me because she's married to me, and sorry, Emily, and then I have a real job, and then I'll have this real dream job, then I will be happy. And I ended up becoming a Bible teacher. It was my dream job, and then I realized my job's not going to make me happy. Very quickly. No one should get their dream job right out of college, or maybe they should. I don't know. But you learn very quickly, like, the dream job is not going to deliver. It can't handle the weight that we press upon it. The career, the girl, the relationship cannot bear the weight of justifying your existence. And we know this to be true. We've all experienced this. where the enemy lays out, he dangles the carrot and he says, yeah, but when you get to this mark, then you'll have peace. Then you'll matter. And we finally snag the carrot. But meaning is elusive. And just even before the taste of the carrot leaves our mouths, we're like, this isn't it. And the enemy is so good, isn't he? He's so good. Oh, wait, maybe this was the thing. This is the thing that's really going to make me happy. This is the thing that's going to bring me my soul peace. Sit down. Have you had that experience in your life where you invest and you pour in and you work on a project or you work to have this perfect experience? And you work on it and you build it up and you do the thing and it goes off without a hitch. It goes off flawlessly. And everyone's patting you on the back. Well done. Good job. You get home. You close the door and you turn the lights off and you lay down and you still feel hollow inside. That's despair. There will never be a thing or an event or an accomplishment that will be able to deliver the peace and significance and meaning when you turn off the light and go to sleep. Your work and your experience and your pleasure cannot bear the weight of giving your life meaning. And in a capitalistic society that is consumer-based driven, the world runs on you not believing that truth. Every marketing agent, I don't know if they're called marketing agents. Everyone in marketing, let's go that. Everyone in marketing will tell you that the world runs because human beings are pretty convinced that if they buy or achieve one more thing, they'll be happy. And we never are. How much sexual imagery do we need to ingest before we realize that the promise that it holds is a fleeting lie? How many chemicals do we need to put in our body? How many shows do we need to binge? How many games or bets won? How many shorts viewed or updates scrolled or followers gained before we come to terms with the truth of what the teacher is telling us here? And this is an easy out because you get to, you're just crushing, I feel like Nathan, you're just beating me over and over again with the truth stick. And this is like the thing, this is the hope this morning, is you can't find what is actually going to satisfy you if you are still committed to pursuing things that will leave you empty. So it's all vanity. It's striving after the wind, and there's nothing to be gained under the sun. Cool. So I turned to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can man do that comes after the king? Only that what has been done. So what is he saying? He's saying, all right, so what I'm looking to now, if having knowledge and wisdom isn't going to satisfy, and if experiencing things and accomplishing things isn't going to satisfy me, maybe living well, like just right living, maybe just living a good life, maybe that's the thing. Yeah. You already know how the story ends, right? So this is what it says, verse 13. Then I saw that there is more to gain in wisdom than folly, as there is more to gain in light than darkness. That makes sense. He's like, listen, When it comes to living rightly, it is better to walk through a minefield without a blindfold on, like just as a rule. But look at what he follows up with. The wise person has his eyes in his head. That's great. But the fools walk in darkness. Not great. And yet I perceived that the same event happens to them all. What's he saying? It doesn't matter how well you lived, you're still going to die. Verse 15, then I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will happen to me also. Why then have I been so very wise? That lie that your life and significance will come about when you live a really, really good life, when you're the good dude, or you're the wise woman. And that is what, that name and that reputation and that life is what's going to give you significance. That line will never be crossed for you. You're never going to be, you will never be good enough. And this is a lie that seems to particularly resonate, and it's particularly loud if you grew up here in the Bible Belt. What matters most? What is going to give your life value? Being a good person. No. Because you will always fall short. And you're still going to die. There's a recent medical survey that came out, and the mortality rate of Americans is around 100%. It's true. It's a fact. Steve Jobs, he once said that the goal of his whole life, accomplishments and doing great things and all of that, was to make a ding in the universe. I think a ding is the audio version of vapor. And you realize a dude that with his life shaped the human experience in the 21st century in incredibly profound ways. Yeah, he made a ding. Still a vapor. I remember reading in college this book by a Christian author, and he said his life was to live 25 years after he dies. I'm like, that's nothing. Like, 25 years, that's your goal? That's not significant at all. And he's like, yeah. It's really brutal. Death is the singular event that frames all of our lives, right? We can't escape it. I remember after my mom died, like, I was looking at, sitting at her kitchen table and looking at the wall where we always have our photos. And coming to, like, in this moment of profound sorrow, realizing, like, there's never going to be another picture taken of my mom that we get to add to that wall. And that's going to happen to me. Like, there will come a day. No more photos. What do we do with that? Verse 18. I hated all my toil with which I toiled under the sun, seeing that what I must leave it to the man who will come after me and who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. Yet he will be a master for all over which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is meaningless. So I turned and gave up my heart to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun, because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. Some of you, you're like, yeah, my kids, they're going to lose it all. Like, what in the world? I understand. What has a man, verse 22, this is what he says. This also is vanity and a great evil. Verse 22, what has a man from all the toil and striving of his heart, for which he toils beneath the sun? For all of his days are full of sorrow, and his work is vexation. Even in the night his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. You guys, remember the poem of Ozymandias? I'm going to say his name wrong. Ozymandias? I can't say it. You remember there's this really depressing poem I had to read in high school. Jumped into my mind, weirdly enough, when I was reading this. I'm going to read it for you. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them on the sand, half sunken, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well of those passions read, which yet survive stamped on these lifeless things. The hand that mocked them and the heart that fed, and on the pedestal these words appear. So he's describing this image, finding this ruin in the desert. And on the pedestal these words appear, my name is Ozymandias. King of kings, look at my works, ye mighty in despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. That's his point. No matter what we accomplish, no matter what we give our lives to, it's going to fade. And I hope you're ready for the but. Like, oh, but there's no reversals. Like this morning, I hope come back next week and the week after. There's no great, like, everything's great. We're going to end in the minor key this morning, by the way. So sorry. I want to say this. Our modern age has done much to keep death in the wings. Right? The brevity of life is something that we work pretty hard to keep out of our minds or to cope with. One of the greatest Christian minds born on this side of the Atlantic was a dude named Jonathan Edwards, and he was an incredible pastor, died at a very young age, and relatively. And he had a list of resolutions that he would read every day. And I'm not going to read all of them because there's like 70. But I'll read a few. What he said. He read these, started off his day reading these. Resolved to think much on all occasions about my own dying and of the common things which are involved with and surround death. And you're like, this guy had to be a joy to hang out with. Resolved never to do anything which I would be afraid to do if it were the last hour of my life. Resolved to live with all my might while I do live. Resolved never to lose one moment of time, but seize the time to use it in the most profitable way I possibly can. Resolved, I will live in such a way as I will wish I had done when I come to die. Without thinking well of the brevity of life, it is easy for the peripheral to justify centrality in our lives. And I'm guilty of it. Like, I'm awful at this. Yesterday, I was also on my phone, trying to make a purchase for my kids. I'm trying to buy them stuff. Like, they need this stuff. It was clothes. They needed clothes. I'm a terrible parent. Her pajamas was up to here. And I'm like, we haven't bought you pajamas forever. All right, we're going to get you clothes. I'm trying to do this. And I'm like, this is really important because I want to be a good dad and provide for you. And my kids are just playing and tussling. and they're being silly, and I was like, hey, stop, I'm trying to do this for you. And like, and I was a little bit short with them. And in that moment, the Spirit said, what matters? Like, what matters? If we don't think about the shortness of this moment, it is easy to lose sight, isn't it? So what is the thing? And I love my son. My son, I posed him the question. We're snuggling. I was like, buddy, what matters most? And he's like, he's quiet. And he says, I'm going to finish with this story. And he's like, I think being nice to friends. It's a good answer for an 8-year-old. I was like, really proud of him. And then I crushed his soul. I said, yeah, but your friends are going to die. And he said, shouldn't have said that. But I didn't say it like that. But I was like, buddy, your friends are going to die. And he looked at me. I was like, so buddy, what's worth living for? And he was quiet. And he's like, I don't know, Dad. It's like, it's right, son. You get Ecclesiastes. There's a glimmer of hope here. There's not a lot of hope, but there's a glimmer. You get to see a little bit into the wings right here. Verse 24. There is nothing better for a person that he should eat and drink. Amen. No, I'm just kidding. That he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. And some of you might be reading this and being like, I didn't know that was in the Bible. This also I saw is from the hand of God. From apart from him, who can eat? Or who can have enjoyment? For the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he has given the business of gathering and collecting, only to give to the one who pleases God. Can I pause here? Given the surety of death, how shall we understand and have joy in this life? And this is really important. Because I think most of us fall in one of two categories. We either fall in the category of like, I'm pretty much just depressed all the time, and I'm trying to figure this out, so this morning's not really helping me very much, Nathan. I'm sorry, hold on, just hold on. The other half of us, maybe half, I don't know, maybe less, is like, we're kind of fine not thinking about the sad, depressing things that Solomon just keeps going back to. And you're like, all right, so what do we do here? How shall we actually enjoy life in a way that lives faithful to reality as it is? And this is Solomon beginning to tease out the answer. You're not going to get the full answer here because he's still the critic. He's still the skeptic. He's still depressed. He doesn't put a rose-colored lens and give you a pat answer. Can I just pause there? Some of you, you may not struggle with the whole meaning of life thing, but you have friends that really are. And we feel the need, don't we, to give them an easy answer. Like, I need a silver bullet to kill that frustration and despair and anxiety that you have. Can I ease you for a little bit? Like, you don't have to do that. Life is complicated and hard. And part of loving people well is just acknowledging the weight of this question. And then the author says this. How can we, knowing death is a surety, barring the Lord's coming, how can we actually enjoy this life? He says, the good and simple things, relish them. Why? Because they're gifts from God. Can I pull back and help us process that a little bit? The simple joys of life were never intended to give meaning and significance and justify your existence. You were never intended to live for the weekend because the weekend can't bear the weight of it. You were never intended to live for the party. You were never intended to live for the relationship, because the relationship will always fail you. It will always fall short of justifying your existence. But wait, please hear me. Once the food, once the drink, once the relationship, the table, is freed from having to justify your existence, you then get to cherish it and celebrate it for what it was originally intended to be, a gift from God, a simple, sweet joy in this life. Period. You get to enjoy it for what it is, because it doesn't have the responsibility to give all of my life significance. Does that make sense? Maybe you've already heard this, but it's a fascinating thing. This book was read every year in the Jewish world. They read it at the feast of the harvest feast. So the harvest feast, because unless you're in agriculture, like I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Like, farmers don't get paid until the harvest. Like, harvest is a big deal. It's like you work all year, you make all of your provision at once. That's a great day. Imagine getting your yearly paycheck on one day. You celebrate well on that day. And so on the Feast of Harvest, they would gather all of their friends and family members together, and they eat better that day probably than any other day of the year. And so they're all gathering around. It's a time of great joint celebration at God's provision, and then they get around and read Ecclesiastes. And you're like, this is juxtaposed realities. What's going on here? Because it's acknowledging two things. One, this harvest, this provision is sweet and wonderful and is a gift from God from our toil. Also, it's not going to satisfy us. And it doesn't have to. It was not intended to. It was never intended to. Your job is going to bring you joy. Your kids are going to bring you joy. There's going to be moments, maybe not all the time, but there's going to be moments where it's really sweet. There's going to be moments where you're sitting around the table, hopefully, a lot of them, those moments, with friends, and there's going to be laughter and good food and good drink, and you'll be like, this is a really sweet moment. And it's going to be insufficient. And you're going to go home and you're going to be like, that wasn't enough. And you're like, that's fine. It doesn't have to be, but it was sweet. And you're like, what? Why? Because those good things are gifts from God. They are not the purpose of your life. They are good gifts that God gives in the midst of life. So you cherish the gift, but you do not mistake the gift as the whole purpose of your life. That's crazy. And that's the thread that Solomon is beginning to tease on. He's going to start pulling on that thread a little bit more. So, what do we do with this? A couple things as we close. Three practical takeaways. First of all, what I would invite you to do today is journal, walk, get alone with God somewhere. Turn off the radio on your drive home. And then process with God in your community, wherever that community looks like. Be it kids, be it spouse, be it roommate, life group. Have this conversation. What is the thing that this morning the Spirit is pricking your heart? Is that thing that the enemy loves to prop up? And you're like, if I get this, if I experience this, or if I have this, or if I achieve this, then I'll be happy. Like, my ask is for you to confess that to your brother or sister. And then, like, kill it. Because that's a lie. And the longer you live for it, the longer and greater your frustration, your despair, and your anxiety will be. So what's the thing? Parents, your kids cannot carry that. Your kids will not justify your life. They can't carry that burden, and they will hate you for it, for putting that on their shoulders. Your spouse can't carry it. Your marriage can't carry it. Your 401k, the stock market definitely can't carry it. World peace won't be able to carry it. Confess it. Secondly, others who trust you and who listen to you. And I'm going to speak specifically to your parents, okay? Parents, your kids need to hear you process death and its implications and how that shapes what you value and live for. Like, I know your life matters, you being here and what you invest in and what you all spend your time in, but there is, do not underestimate the beautiful, formative conversations as you walk with your kids and be like, hey, listen, can I talk about, like, this is what really matters? And to be there with my son, man, last night, I had already written this, so this was cheating. I had already written this, and I was like, we're going to do it right now because I don't want to be a hypocrite. And so with my son, I was like, buddy, who's the one person that's not going to die? And he's like, he sits his head up, he's like, God. And I'm like, what does that mean, buddy? And he's like, I feel like you should live for him. And I'm like, your life significance, value, purpose, satisfaction in the context of eternity is only going to be found in that which is transcendent, in the one who is infinite, in the one who is eternal. You seek for any answers in anything else, it will only lead to despair. All right, sorry. Walk that out with people, your coworkers, your neighbors. When death comes up, like, listen, when they bring up death, and this past few years, it's regular. When death comes up, our knee-jerk reaction, because death is uncomfortable, we want to change the subject, or we just want to say, like, pat answer, it's going to be okay. Listen to the Spirit well in that moment, because those moments are key points where we get to speak to things that are eternal. And so listen to the Spirit. Speak well. Listen well. Speak with compassion and winsomeness and conviction and transparency. The world really is pretty desperate for this truth and this comfort. Lastly, make a point. This is fun homework, all right? Make a point, make a plan right now or in the last worship set or like on the way home. I don't care, whatever. Make a point and plan and ask the Spirit, like, Lord, what is one simple joy I can do today or this week that I can invite others into and celebrate a simple joy that you have given? And then when you are in that moment, be it around a table at your favorite restaurant or with a favorite meal or a cheesecake, which is my thing, and you're like, this simple joy is not what I live for, but also it's a wonderful gift from a good and kind and gracious, generous Father. And then you celebrate that as with your brothers and sisters. That's what we do. Like, this life, in the midst of all of its hardships, and so now I'm speaking to those who like live and just like constantly, the glass is half empty and we're all going to die. Yeah, yeah, all right, I get that. You're not wrong. We're going to go back to that next week, so just hang on. But also, like, there is wonderful things in this world right now. Go for a walk outside and cherish this beautiful winter day that's 60 degrees. God is super kind and generous, and he actually really does love you, and he demonstrates that love by giving us chocolate. Or the other thing that you, if you have a milk allergy, I'm really sorry. Like, again, we're going to go back to that next week. But also, sunsets. Right? Let us not think lightly. And let us not take for granted. And let us not slip through unappreciated the good things that God gives us. Amen? So this is your homework. Go find a thing, do the thing, celebrate the thing. All right? Nod your heads. We're going to come back and share next week. Just kidding. We're not going to. But share in your life groups for sure. All right? Now, this is the last thing. our lives, I'm going to invite the band back up. Our lives truly do, as we continue this, our lives truly do have value in the context of eternity. Not because of the things we experience, not because of the things we accomplish, but rather because of the one whose lives are rooted in. He is steadfast. He stepped into this transient world to redeem a transient, fleeting vapor. Our lives are passing, our lives are brief, and yet, in spite of that brevity and in spite of that insignificance, God became flesh for you. Yeah, you're fleeting, and you still are loved. That's the beauty of the gospel. So in the next few minutes, what we get to do is we get to worship the God who loves. The God who is not waiting to only love and serve and care for the valuable ones. But while we were yet sinners, and while we had fallen short, and while we are but flesh, he came and died for us. Would you bow your heads and pray with me? I lift up my brothers and sisters, Lord. Father, for those who in this room find their hearts racked and crippled by despair and anxiousness, Lord, I ask that you, your Spirit, would grip them with your steadfast affection, that your voice would ring true, they're loved, and you have demonstrated that love in giving them very real and good things. By giving them brothers and sisters and an eternal family. And that hope is steadfast. And Lord, I also lift up those who may be in this room. We find caught believing we're elevating something that is incredibly passing and fleeting and insignificant to a position of this has to happen or my life doesn't matter. I ask that you would convict, that you would bring to repentance, and that we as brothers and sisters would find fresh joy and hope. And knowing that our life is known by you. We are known by you. You are present with us. Even in our fleeting, passing moments in this life. And our hope is sure in the life to come. Thank you for that. And in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for joining for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child the repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. We'd love to connect with you, so we invite you to reach out to us at summitupstate.org.